Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM. And 7:50 a.m. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy as always to be back with you here on the Afternoon Drive, and we have a packed show for you today. Yesterday, we talked a lot about Dale Earnhardt Jr., played you clips of his press conference as he announced his retirement from NASCAR, effective at the end of the season. We're going to talk about that in depth today. We're going to be joined by Woody Kane of the Motor Racing Network. He's also a pit and turn announcer for MRN, and he's the host of NASCAR Today. He's going to join us here in just a bit. He's about 10 minutes out here on the show, and we're going to talk about Dale Earnhardt Jr. and the immediate impact on the sport of NASCAR. Look, NASCAR diehards don't want to face the facts, but the numbers and the ratings of NASCAR, television-wise, they're down. And losing Dale Earnhardt Jr., I believe, is a huge blow to the sport. The three most recognizable names, three of the most recognizable names, Jeff Gordon, Tony Stewart, Dale Earnhardt, retiring in consecutive seasons. And diehard NASCAR fans will always be there. I mean, that's part of the sport. But when you look at the fringe fans, those are three names that drive the sport. Where does NASCAR go from here? To me, it's very similar. You go back to the late 80s, early 90s in the NBA. To me, it's very similar when the golden age of the league was dwindling. And I'm talking about Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, and Dr. J. Those were the three most marketable players. We call it the golden age of the NBA for a reason. And a lot of it had to do with those three. Fortunately for the NBA, when those three walked away, the NBA had Michael Jordan, the most marketable athlete in the history of professional sports, bar none. I don't know that NASCAR has that. You have Jimmy Johnson, who wins and wins and wins, and when we look at his career resume, it's incredible. Dale Earnhardt Jr. is special to the sport, and he's not exactly a dominating individual. He's got 26 wins over the course of his career, but he's never won a cup championship. Yet he is the most popular driver, and a lot of it has to do with his father's brand, I get that. But Dale Jr. carved out a niche in the sport, and his interaction with the fans, if you go to these events, it's fantastic. There's a reason why he's a fan favorite. Where does NASCAR go next, and where does Hendrick Motorsports go next? Fascinating conversation with a lot of great topics when you bring this specific one up. So we're going to talk to Woody Kane. That's coming up in just a moment. Last night on KOAL, the Utah Jazz inch one step closer to eliminating the Los Angeles Clippers in the NBA playoffs. They topped the Clippers last night at Staples Center, and I think the Clippers are a little frustrated. This is what the Clippers do in the postseason. Reoccurring theme. I'm not taking anything away from the Jazz at all. They have played a great series. Again, having Rudy Gobert back, the great equalizer. Blake Griffin, he's out, yet Chris Paul has found a way to keep the Clippers competitive. However, I think this series comes to an end on Friday. I'm taking the Jazz to win this one in six. And if they don't win in six, I'll go ahead and change my view, and I'll take the Clippers in seven because I still believe Chris Paul is the best player in the series, but the Jazz have the Clippers right where they want them. They have now beat the Clippers not once but twice on the road. Excellent situation for the Utah Jazz. We'll talk about that in just a bit. As far as the schedule in the NBA goes, tonight we have two playoff games on tap. Atlanta taking on Washington. Start time for this game, well, it's underway right now actually on TNT. A very early start time. And a tip-off, it just actually took place, believe it or not. And then we get Chicago at Boston. Tip-off for this game is set at 6:30. Interesting series here, number one versus number eight. No home team has won in this series. Boston's looking to take complete control tonight. We'll talk more NBA coming up in just a bit on the show. We've got to pause for a quick commercial break. During the break, we'll give you the rundown on everything happening in the local sports front. And again, on the show today, we're going to talk to Woody Kane from the Motor Racing Network, and we'll talk to Jameson Welsh in some NBA playoff basketball, focusing heavily on the Utah Jazz and the Los Angeles Clippers. It's all straight ahead here on Drive Time Sports.
With the sixth pick in the 2014 NBA Draft, the Boston Celtics select Marcus Smart.
This is Marcus Smart from the Boston Celtics, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Marcus Smart, what a spin move and a finish. Hard to handle Marcus Smart, whether he's outside or inside the paint.
Back on Drive Time Sports, 107.3 FM, 750 AM KOAL. We've got to talk some NBA basketball. The Utah Jazz in the playoffs for the first time in 5 years, and now they are on the brink of sending the Clippers home and advancing to the second round. Very exciting time for Utah Jazz basketball. Some other playoff series that have wrapped up and some that are just about to wrap up. And with that being said, we'll bring in today's special guest, Jameson Welsh of BelieveTheHypeNBA.com. Jameson, as always, a pleasure to get you on. Thank you.
Oh, not a problem, man. Thanks for having me as always. Definitely appreciate it.
You definitely appreciate you a lot, that is for sure. And we'll start by talking about the Utah Jazz. Last night, they grabbed a monumental win, topping the Clippers for the second time in L.A. Now, you and I talked about this at the beginning of the series. I said it was more than it was a must for the Jazz to take one of the first two games in L.A. I didn't know if this team could actually beat the Clippers twice at Staples. Now, the road got a little bit easier when Blake Griffin went down. Still, last night, it was a very entertaining game. We've had a couple of contests in this series where two key ingredients. I mean, we're talking about Rudy Gobert and Blake Griffin. They have missed games. I didn't know how Utah would respond without Gobert. They won a game without him. I didn't know how the Clippers would respond without Blake Griffin. Things have worked out okay. I mean, they were competitive in this game last night. So, with that being said, this series is over now, though, right? I mean, Utah's got one more game coming back to Utah, Game 6 on Friday. Series is over.
Yeah, I believe the Utah Jazz will advance to the second round and play the Golden State Warriors Sunday afternoon in Oakland. I think that's going to be the case. When you look at the Clippers situation, they don't have anyone outside of Chris Paul that makes you fear them. You know, you don't fear Redick, you don't fear Crawford, you don't fear the coach's son. You definitely don't fear Mbamute. There's just not a whole lot there. And then DeAndre Jordan is not a threat offensively. So there's just not a whole lot there to really put fear in your heart. So when you look at that roster, you're looking like, okay, well, they have some names, but most of the names are either overrated or outside of their prime. So it's a tailor-made matchup for the Jazz, and they have the one position where the Clippers are lacking is a wing spot, and that's been exposed more than any series the Clippers have had over the last few years. Joe Ingles, Joe Johnson, Rodney Hood, and Gordon Hayward, the Clippers don't have anyone to guard those guys. So when you see those guys starting to get hot in the second half, they don't have anyone to cool them off. And next thing you know, Rodney Hood's shooting 25-footers. I mean, Joe Johnson is turning back into Phoenix Joe Johnson. And it's just one of those things where it's a great matchup for Utah, and they're going to close it out. It's just a matter of time, but they're the better team. They're the better overall team, and this is the end of the Clippers.
You know, I don't want to take anything away from the Jazz. I'm not going to take anything away from the Jazz. I mean, I have done nothing but praise this team all year long. I projected this team would win 50 games at the beginning of the season, but there's no doubt that the Blake Griffin injury has affected this series drastically, and that's not taking anything away from Utah. I thought this was a tough matchup for Utah before going into the postseason. I know the Jazz, they didn't have Rudy Gobert for a couple of games. I know Derek Favors is nowhere close to being healthy, but Blake Griffin, you talk about not fearing anyone. Blake Griffin is a game changer. And when the Clippers lost him, they lost an intricate part to this team that makes the Clippers semi-relevant in the Western Conference to begin with.
Well, here's the thing. Even before Blake got hurt, this series was very competitive. Like, every game was going down to the final 2 minutes. The game was within doubt. So it's not like it was just Blake and that was it. They had, you know, it was close regardless. But now you remove Blake from the situation. That was one of the advantages the Clippers had. And you take him away, then it obviously tilts to the Jazz favor. It's automatic. Now, here's my thing. Here's my thing with the whole situation. When I look at the team, look at body language. I look at how the team responds. I got a text from someone on game 4 the Jazz took a 1-point lead. Clippers called timeout in the fourth quarter. I forgot the score, but it was still close. The game is within doubt. Like, it can go either way. I got a text from a guy who's a Clippers fan saying, "Yeah, this game's over. I've seen this before. The Jazz about to go on a run. This game's over." Lo and behold, that happens. Clippers are never the same. And that's just how it goes. Like, you can tell one team has momentum, one team doesn't. Even though the Jazz are somewhat of a young team, their core pieces are young, they still have some veterans that can make plays. So it's a very interesting situation. But I think the Clippers mentally are done. They are finished.
This game five, and again, when the series is 2-2, I don't have the number in front of me, but when the series is tied 2-2, the team that wins game five wins. Something that's like 90% of the time that team goes on to win. It's a huge number. This game was won last night by the Jazz in the third quarter because the Clippers score a lot of points. The Jazz are known for their defensive tenacity. They held the Clippers to 15 points in the third quarter last night, Jameson. That's where this game was won.
That you're absolutely right. That's where the game was won. But also, here's the thing. The adjustments they've made mid-series, the adjustments they've made on how they cover the pick and roll, how they guard the Clippers guys, putting length on the Clippers smaller guards, like putting length on Redick, putting length on Chris Paul in the second half to make him work extra hard to get shots and to get things involved. That's why it's very difficult to have a smaller backcourt. Just like Portland's learning right now, it's very difficult to win with a small backcourt. The Clippers have a very small backcourt. So when you got... And when you're as long and lanky as Utah is, you can put a Rodney Hood on J.J. Redick and take him out of a series, or on Crawford and take him out of a game. You can put, you can put Joe Ingles on Chris Paul. There's certain things you can do to make things very difficult. And I think some of those adjustments by Coach Quinn Snyder have been really good for them. And that to me has been the key of the adjustments. Because even though players are missing, that's when coaching comes into effect. What adjustments can you make? What can you do? The Clippers have not made any adjustments. They've allowed guys to get hot. They've allowed guys to introduce themselves in the series. Like Rodney Hood is now a little bit more known because he's hit some daggers in the last couple of nights. The casual basketball fan doesn't watch most Jazz games, but now they know who he is. Joe Johnson. They haven't done anything. They haven't doubled him. They haven't done anything. Like you, if a guy is torching you three games out of four, you gotta double him. Like you can't single cover him with smaller guys and Luke Bamute. You gotta double him, force someone else to beat you, and they haven't done that. And it's just been alarming that Doc Rivers, who's been the coach in this league for a long time now, hasn't had any kind of answers for that. It's really alarming.
I think the series is over because I think the Jazz will win Game 6. With that being said, if the Clippers do win Game 6, I'll switch my view really quick because I believe Game 7s, I never pick against a team that has the best player on the floor, and the Clippers still have the best player on the floor in Chris Paul. I think it's that important that the Jazz win Game 6. I think they get it. I think they win Game 6 and they close this thing out on Friday, Jameson, but that's a huge game. The Jazz have to take care of business at home.
Well, this is a question I'm going to ask you. This is the biggest Jazz game since, like, this game right here. When's the last time the Jazz had a bigger game than this particular game?
Long time. You have to go back. Ideally thinking right off the top of my head, before the, I believe it was the Rockets last season that clinched the 8th spot, right, in the Western Conference, if I remember correctly?
Right.
Before we knew the outcome of that game, it would have been Kobe's 60-point game last year because that essentially was a playoff game for the Jazz. They needed to win that game, and they had to have the Rockets lose. That didn't happen. We knew the outcome of the Rocket game at about the second quarter, but going into it, that was a must-win situation for the Jazz last year.
Right, right.
It's been a while, though. It's been a long while.
Franchise-wise, I mean, this is the playoff game. This is the game. This is probably the biggest game in a long time. I mean, probably since Stockton Malone days.
Now, I'll give you the biggest
game. They haven't been, well...
Let me give you the biggest game. Off the top of my head, this is the biggest game that the Jazz have had. I'm going to go all the way back to 2009 when they played the Lakers in the second round and the series was tied 2-2.
Okay, fair enough. I can give you that. That works. But just in terms of where their franchise is and where it's heading to, this is a younger... situation. That situation was a little bit more different because no one had them winning that series or had them doing much, going forward. So we know that team had a kind of a limited ceiling, but this team is a young team that has some promise going forward. It's a pretty big game that can build momentum because this is a Clippers team that they're beating on paper, which is better than them. Like on paper, the Clippers have a better roster. So this is a very big game going forward. It's going to be very interesting to see what does take place. But I do agree with you with 2009 situation that definitely makes sense.
Jameson, let's move on and talk about another team that did close out a series last night. Houston knocking off OKC. They get it done in five games. It was a very compelling series. Outside of game one, every game came down to the wire. Your takeaway from that series, and can Houston challenge San Antonio? Because I think San Antonio is now in the driver's seat in the Memphis series, although there's a great chance that series goes seven. Is Houston a legitimate threat to San Antonio?
Yes, they are. They are, because they can score. Like, the Spurs have had issues offensively, especially whenever your starting point guard has 0 points and zero assists in a playoff game when he plays a bunch of minutes, there's a problem. There's a huge, huge, huge problem. And that's something that just cannot happen at all. It's one of those things that you just can't afford to have. You just cannot. And when you go against Houston, you have to know that they're going to have at least one quarter in the game where they're going to go for 30 on you, 30 plus on you. And they can get hot at any time. So when I look at that situation, it's a situation where I think it's a toss-up. I truly think it's a toss-up. I think, well, of course, D'Antoni has always struggled with Popovich teams, so that's something that keep an eye on. But when it comes down to it, I do think the Rockets are right there. It really depends on how the game is called as well. Is Harden going to get those calls? If he does, then I tilt it to Houston. If he doesn't, then I'm looking at I look at the Spurs to advance. But the one thing I've seen more than anything is the Spurs are a one-man show in a lot of sense. If Kawhi's not going well, they're in trouble. Like, they need him to perform on both ends a lot. And if he's not doing so, they're in trouble, because a lot of the other guys are kind of like specialists. They're not like well-rounded guys. Even though Marcus Aldridge, as talented as he is, as good as he has been in this league, he's still a guy that he doesn't bring it every night. He doesn't have a whole lot of impact on the game as much as you think.
I want to step away from – this is more of an abstract question here. Tonight, the Bulls, Celtics, they go at it. The series is tied 2-2. The home team is yet to win in this series. But Rajon Rondo is coming back. Now, the Bulls were up 2-0 before Rondo went down with an injury. They've lost two games since. Rondo played very, very well in those first two games. I mean, he was flirting with a triple-double in game two. Joe Johnson has played very, very well for the Utah Jazz. Is it a coincidence that we have some aging vets that maybe some teams had written off now that they're performing? Or is it just, I mean, these two guys were elite in their prime. I mean, they were. A lot of people viewed Rajon Rondo as an elite point guard at one particular time in his career. Joe Johnson was a very elite scorer at one time in his career. Is it just that knack for playoff basketball where we see the vets kind of rise above? Or is it a complete coincidence in a matchup?
Well, first and foremost, Rajon Rondo is ruled out for Game 5. He will be he's trying to get him to go for Game 6. I guess it took an MRI of his thumb and still broke, so that's going to be interesting to follow. But when it comes to veteran guys that know how to play basketball, that know how to play, and they don't mind the pressure, those are two of the guys that come to mind, because they've been in so many different situations. Both guys have played over 100 playoff games. They've been on favorite teams. They've been on underdog teams. They've been in a lot of situations and a lot of different scenarios, and the play is a little bit different. Not everyone likes the pressure, but those guys definitely like it. They both have skill sets to flourish in those sets. Now, Rondo, as long as the coaching staff allows him to be Rondo, then you're in good shape. Even though he's not the same guy he was 4 years ago, he's still a really good player, and he was giving the Celtics the blues before he broke his thumb. So it's going to be very interesting to see if he does come back to this series, what will happen. But you got to have vets, and that's why, as much as the NBA is, trying to get as younger as possible and trying to do so many different things, trying to get younger players this, younger players that, you got to have some vets that can make plays. It reminds me of Paul Pierce a couple years ago. He really single-handedly got the Wizards to almost the conference finals. So you got to have some vets that can make plays and that aren't afraid of the moment to guide the young guys along.
Before we end, I think, again, on the show, every now and then I'll make a prediction. Every now and then you make a prediction, one that both you and I were wrong on. We both thought that Rondo would be out of the league by now. Now this guy is a major contributor in the first round of the NBA playoffs. I was wrong.
Well, here's the thing. If he doesn't have the first two games like he had, then our prediction would have been right, because in the third spot in a row where things just didn't work out. And once you're an aging point guard with attitude issues, there's not a whole lot of spots for you in the league for those. So we were two games away from being right, but at the same time, I don't like to say, get anyone out of a job. That's not what we're here for. When he's playing right, he can orchestrate offense, very, very well. But that being said, it's unfortunate that he is hurt, because he could have did something very special with that Chicago team in this first round and got the Celtics out of here. But it didn't take place. He has maybe a year left with someone. I don't know who it's going to be next year, but it'll be very interesting to follow.
Jameson, always fun to catch up, talk some NBA basketball with you. We'll do it again next week.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me, as always.
We've got a break for just a moment. We have more Drive Time Sports coming up right after this.
There is a Dale Earnhardt in the field today, but it is not the seven-time NASCAR Winston Cup champion. It is Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Dale, his dad, told me up in Michigan just before we came down here, he said he may have more race car than he does experience, but we'll see how he does, and indeed we will.
Dale Earnhardt Jr., first attempt to qualify for a Busch Series Grand National Division race. A bit surprised at the qualifying position, or did you expect to be up this close?
Well, we knew we were good in practice, but, you know, it's just a surprise to make the field.
The fans are going absolutely crazy. Dale Earnhardt Jr. comes to the checkered flag and wins the 2000 running of the Winston.
What are you going to do with that $500,000?
Probably give it to Pops, let him do. He knows what to do with the money. I just know how to drive, that's all.
Dale Earnhardt Jr. pulls down to the start-finish line. He will win the 46th running of the Great American Race.
I always said, you know, people have asked me ever since I turned 40 when I would retire and all that, and all I wanted to do was be able to make that choice myself.
Checkered flag, ready to fly. It's Earnhardt in turn three.
Runner up no more at Martinsville. Dale Earnhardt Jr. off turn number four for the final time, and he has won here at the Martinsville Speedway.
You know, mentally, you have to make the decision if you want to keep racing, and if you want to keep racing, you got to go in 100%. This is the top elite, you know, series of motorsports in North America, and if you're going to be out there, you can't do it without 100%.
Coming to the line, Dale Earnhardt Jr. wins the 2008 Budweiser Shootout, scoring the first victory in his tenure at Hendrick Motorsports.
You get into a routine of doing the same thing over and over and over. You sort of lose sight of how fortunate you are and how fun it is, and that you're supposed to be having fun. You do it for fun. You lose sight of that a little bit as you're going through that week-to-week-to-week grind, and every off-season sort of seems to get shorter, and you're going back again and again and again. You can definitely lose sight of just really trying to enjoy what's happening to you.
At Daytona, the final time off turn four, Dale Earnhardt Jr. with the lead. To the start-finish line, Michael Waltrip dives to the inside, but Dale Earnhardt Jr. wins the Aaron's 499.
One of the things that I learned early in my career that was one of the most difficult things was that people were going to come and go. As a kid, you're naive, and you just assume things are going to last.
Dale Earnhardt Jr. will win for the sixth time at Talladega Super Speedway.
Dale Jr. looking three wide into three, and Stenhouse brushes the wall.
You know, you didn't realize how lucky you were to be there and have those moments, you know. And those, they're gone. They're long, long gone, and you never get them back.
What a headline this is going to make. Dale Earnhardt Jr. comes back to the Daytona International Speedway, leading the pack, coming to the line. He will win the Pepsi 400. Saluting 23-year-old Dale Earnhardt Jr.
The sport's going to be fine as drivers continue to retire and new guys come in. We got some pretty exciting guys coming in, a lot of talent, a lot of personality. So I'm hopeful for the future of the sport.
That's a tribute to Dale Earnhardt Jr., who yesterday announced he would be retiring from the sport of NASCAR at the end of the season. And we're going to talk more Dale Earnhardt Jr. right now and bring in a special guest. He is Woody Kane. He is a pit and turn announcer for the Motor Racing Network, also the host of NASCAR Today. Woody, it's a pleasure to get you on the show. I appreciate the time.
You bet. Good to be here.
Definitely an exciting time in NASCAR. I'm going to go out and say it. It's kind of a sad time in NASCAR with the recent retirement announcement of Dale Earnhardt Jr. Obviously, we get him for the remainder of the year, but how surprised were you, Woody, at this announcement yesterday?
Not so much at the announcement, but of the timing of it, I guess, would be the best way to put it. Last year, Dale Earnhardt Jr. was adamant about his desire to come back, his desire to work his way back into the seat, going through all the rehab he had to for the concussion symptoms and that type of thing. And he had said along the way, which made yesterday not surprising, that he wanted things to be on his terms, not forced because of an injury or a medical condition or what have you. So I guess I would have to say not necessarily surprised by the announcement, but maybe the timing of it. Even at Daytona at the beginning of the year, he was asked about his contract, you know, re-signing with Rick Hendrick since his contract ends at the end of this season. And at that time, he said, well, I want to wait a few races and see how things go before I make a decision. It turns out the reason was he wanted to make sure that it was an obligation he could fulfill instead of having to cut short if he decided to re-sign. And apparently he made that decision at the end of last month and made it known to Mr. Hendrick, and the rest is history, as they say.
You know, I know a lot of these questions were addressed yesterday in the press conference. You know, he was asked how much of this does, in fact, have to do with the concussions, and he did mention going out on the sport on his own terms, which is lovely. I mean, way too many times when we talk basketball, football, baseball, we see athletes unable to go out on their own terms, and that's just something that you absolutely hate to see. But looking at the legacy that Dale Earnhardt Jr. has really built, I mean, we're talking about one of the most successful drivers, one of the most popular drivers, I guess is what we should say, in the history of the sport. Where does NASCAR go from here? Because now we're talking about another legend that's the third legend in as many seasons, Jeff Gordon, Tony Stewart, now Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Yeah, I think, and you see this in other sports as well, which sometimes people have a tendency to forget when, for example, when a Peyton Manning hangs up the cleats, did people go, oh my gosh, what is the NFL going to do now? No, because there were young stars coming up through the pipeline that people were paying attention to. Granted, the NFL is the 800-pound gorilla, and you know, they have their pipeline of young stars through the draft and whatnot. It's a little bit different in NASCAR. But look, you got Kyle Larson. He's only 26 years old. He just got his first win last year, won at his home track at Auto Club Speedway earlier this year, finished second four times, is leading the standings, and he's in that young guns category. Second in the standings, Chase Elliott, the son of a NASCAR Hall of Famer in Bill Elliott, and he could win at any weekend. He's right there knocking on the door. You look a little further back, you've got Ryan Blaney. He's 10th in the standings now, driving for the Wood Brothers, another second-generation driver in his early 20s. How about Eric Jones, a rookie teammate with Martin Truex Jr.? He's only 20 years old. You can go even further back and look at William Byron, who Rick Hendricks scooped up, got away from Kyle Busch Motorsports after he won 7 truck races there, now has him in an Xfinity car at Junior Motorsports, where he's second in the standings. And, you know, these young guys just keep coming up. Even what we now would think of as a sort of a grizzled veteran in a Joey Logano, he's only 26 years old. There are a lot of good, young, talented drivers that I think people will gravitate to coming up through the pipeline right now. It's a question of which one will they latch onto. If you're a junior fan, is there another guy in the wings, or is that going to be something where, you know, it'll never be the same for you? I think new young blood always comes along in every sport that capture people's attention.
Yeah, I definitely don't think that NASCAR is lacking talent in that regard, but I honestly believe in comparing the sports that this is a relevant comparison in the late 80s in the NBA moving into the early 90s when the league lost Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, and Dr. J. Those were three very marketable stars. Now, fortunately for the NBA, they had Michael Jordan, and he became the most marketable athlete probably in the history of professional sports. Does NASCAR have a guy that is equally as marketable, or do you see any of these young guns filling that type of role? Because they're talented, there's no doubt about it, but I think there is a difference between talent and marketability.
Yeah, I think Kyle Larson is a guy people are going to love as they get to know him more. Chase Elliott is the same way. Look at Daniel Suarez, for example, who's replacing Carl Edwards now over at Joe Gibbs Racing. That opens up a whole new avenue, a whole other market in the Latino market. You know, he's from Mexico, the defending Xfinity Series champ, even though technically he's not defending his title this year. He was the champ last year in the Xfinity Series. But that opens up a whole new market to NASCAR for people to reach who may have not been that interested before. Now that they've got a guy in terms of a Latino population that might be somebody to pull for, that opens up a whole range of other options. I think a more apt comparison, since NASCAR is it's not really, but you think of it as the individual driver when really it's a team sport with the guys building the cars, pitting the cars, the crew chief, that type of thing. But an apt comparison might be like Tiger Woods' situation in golf.
Yeah, that's a fair comparison as well. Again, our guest right now is Woody Cain from the Motor Racing Network. He's a pit reporter and turn announcer and also the host of NASCAR Today. Woody, let's talk about Hendrick. What does it mean for Hendrick Motorsports now that Dale Earnhardt Jr. will be gone at the end of the year? At least in my estimation, I mean, anyone that Rick Hendrick wants out of that garage, he's going to get, right, to replace Dale Earnhardt Jr. I mean, in your eyes, where do they go next?
Well, the easy answer is Alex Bowman, who filled in last year during his injury, along with Jeff Gordon. He's the guy that Hendrick didn't want to let get away. He wanted to keep him there because of what he does with simulation work, testing work for them, and plus a capable backup if one of the other guys gets injured. Remember, he's got over 80-some cup starts so far in his career. And now, is he the guy that's the marketable replacement to Dale Earnhardt Jr.? No, nobody's going to reach that level, at least immediately. Maybe he's a bridge to another another guy whose contract may be coming up at another team, you know, 1-2 years down the road. Maybe he's a bridge to a guy like a young William Byron, who was also over at Kyle Busch Motorsports that Rick Hendrick snatched away, as we talked about a little bit earlier, and is going to be moving up through the Xfinity Series ranks. He's second in the standings right now. Is he a bridge to a guy like that? Maybe. But I think the easy answer right now is an Alex Bowman. There's typically a gentleman's agreement where you don't go after other guys who are under contract to teams. I mean, it's been violated before in the past, but typically what you'll see is a guy who's coming out of a contract or in the last year of his contract start negotiating for something like that. It's a big seat, big shoes to fill, and you know the old cliche I'm sure you've heard is, do you want to be the guy that follows that guy?
Right, absolutely. If we talk in terms of what Dale Earnhardt Jr. has meant to the sport, in your eyes, Woody, someone who is so involved with NASCAR, I mean, again, we go over your accolades and what you do for the Motor Racing Network. Where would you place Dale Earnhardt Jr. as far as polarizing NASCAR drivers in the sport's history?
Well, I don't know how polarizing he might be. I guess there are some people who debate whether or not he's worthy of Hall of Fame status, but you know there are plenty of guys in the Hall of Fame who have less wins or who have, you know, less championships or that type of thing. He's got 26 wins, not counting an All-Star win. He's got 2 Daytona 500s in there. He's got 2 Xfinity Series championships along the way. I don't know that there's a guy like that who, you know, are you going to call it the Hall of Fame or the Hall of Stats? I guess that's what the question gets down to, but I'm not sure that's exactly what you're trying to get at.
Yeah, I mean, that's always tricky, regardless what sport we're talking about. I mean, is it based specifically off of numbers, or do you look at what an individual has done for the sport? And I think there's no doubt about it. At the end of the day, Dale Earnhardt Jr. has done a lot for the sport of NASCAR.
Oh, certainly he has. It brought a legion of fans aboard. You know, he was the guy who, you know, a moment ago we were trying to figure out and talk about some guys who are going to be the up-and-comers that fans may gravitate toward. At the time, his father was getting toward the end of his career, and guys like, you know, Ricky Rudd that he used to race with at that time were getting near the end of their careers. There was this whole discussion like we're having today about who's going to replace these stars. Well, at that time, Dale Earnhardt Jr. was one of those guys. He replaced, you know, not replaced, but was there as the older stars started to step out of the car. He was one of those guys. Remember the old the Budweiser paint scheme and the backwards hat and the goatee and all that at a time when that wasn't as common as we see now? That he was that guy then. So the question becomes, who's going to be that guy going down the road?
Here's a question that I know Dale Earnhardt talked a little bit about yesterday. Junior talked about this yesterday. Could you see him moving Junior Motorsports to the Cup Series eventually?
Well, he says Kelly says no, his sister, so that's one thing, and she's a big part of the business there. But I think he doesn't want that headache, if you can describe it that way. That's a whole nother ballgame. If you think of the Xfinity Series as a baseball size issue, then the Cup Series is a basketball or bowling ball size issue in terms of, you know, the money, what you have to do, the obligations, that type of thing. Plus, I think he really enjoys developing younger drivers. I've had several conversations with him about trying to get younger guys opportunities in his cars, but the difficult part is he has to try and find sponsorship to do it. And you hear all the time from fans who say, oh, I don't want Kyle Busch in these Xfinity or truck races. He's ruining everything by winning all the time. But if it's Dale Earnhardt Jr., fans seem to like it. Well, in order for him to give an opportunity to a younger guy who doesn't have that big of a name, a sponsor, in order to write the check, may say, okay, Dale, we'll pay for X amount of races if you drive 3 of them or something like that. That's why, part of why, anyway, he said yesterday he's still got 2 more Xfinity races to run next year, so he's not getting completely away from the sport, and I don't think he wants to go up to that Cup level. I think he likes the level he's at with the Xfinity Series in terms of team ownership.
As far as this season goes, I mean, how similar do you expect this to be to Jeff Gordon's final season or Tony Stewart's final season, knowing that this is it? This is it for Dale Jr. Does that cast a shadow over the remainder of the season, every single weekend out now, the rest of the NASCAR season?
I think he would be uncomfortable with all that attention. He's not been a guy who does it for the accolades, so to speak. He's a guy who as he mentioned yesterday, did it to get his dad to notice him way back when and to get him to pay more attention to him way back when, and loves being around his guys and that camaraderie more than the fame or the spotlight. That's why, if you remember earlier in his career when he would have availabilities or interviews, he would stare at the podium a lot and stammer a lot, and now he seems much more comfortable in his own skin. I think to a certain extent he will relish in the chance to mingle with fans who want to love him and say goodbye from, you know, full-time driving, but at the same time he's not going away necessarily, and he could easily remember Tony Stewart won a race at Sonoma that nobody really thought he had a chance to win to make the playoffs. Jeff Gordon has the dramatic finish at Martinsville in the playoffs to keep moving through and keep going forward. Could we see something like that? Sure. 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, people were asking, oh my gosh, is Jimmy Johnson over the hill and out of the game? And then look what happens. He wins two straight.
Right. And that was going to be the final question I was going to ask you. Right now, if you take a look at the standings in the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series playoff chase, Dale Earnhardt is 24th. He does have a top five finish this year. Do you see him making the final 16?
Oh, I think he will. Keep in mind, there are still three restrictor plate tracks left, and those are the ones that he has excelled at over the years. He's got one more chance at Daytona, two more chances at Talladega, and I don't think you'd find anybody who would bet against him, particularly at Talladega. But there are some other tracks he's perfectly capable of winning at as well along the way. And remember, all it takes is that one, unless we get, you know, past 16 winners, which we haven't done yet, then you start getting into tiebreakers and points and that type of thing for the playoffs. But yes, I think he's capable of winning a race, being in the top 20 at the end of the season in order to make the playoffs. And who knows, once you get there, it's like we say in other sports, once you make the playoffs, anything can happen.
Sure, absolutely. Woody Kane, again, I really appreciate you taking out the time to join us on the air today and to talk about the big announcement yesterday coming from Dale Earnhardt Jr. Before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
At MRN.com, we have the Motorsports Monday show. I host that one with Brad Keselowski, spotter Joey Meyer. That's on every Monday at noon at MRN.com and our free app. You can also get that on iTunes after the fact. NASCAR Today, every weekday, depending on what market you're in, it's between 5 and 7 p.m. and drive time for people to come home, where we have the biggest story of the day. And my next race will be Kansas. I'll be on pit road.
Woody, it was a pleasure to get you on. Thank you again for the insight. Hopefully we can get you on again soon.
You bet. It was fun.
Again, that's Woody Kane taking out the time to join us here on Drive Time Sports. We've got a break for just a moment. When we return, we're going to move over to talk NBA basketball right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. The Utah Jazz one game away from advancing to the second round.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Beagles.
Back to put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. I definitely have to thank Woody Kane and, of course, Jameson Welsh for taking out the time to join us. Tomorrow, we'll dive back into the local sports front. Coach Jeff Cincinnatus of the Carbon Dinos will join us. We'll have a great conversation there as we talk Carbon High School basketball. Also tomorrow, it's a full day because at 5:45, we will begin our live coverage of the NFL Draft. It's coming up. I'm excited for it. Tomorrow night, we have a live podium feed. Roger Goodell in Philadelphia will bring you the real-time selections. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. So we'll be with you all night tomorrow for the first round of the NFL Draft. I'll catch you tomorrow, same time, same place, 4 to 5, right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Be safe. I am out.